This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us for our radio Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. We broadcast and stream at the same time at prairiepublic.org, and you can find the show after the broadcast at prairiepublic.org. Again, the show is called Main Street. And today we're going to start our show with Mick Belts. He's the coordinator of medical humanities at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine and a senior lecturer in ethics in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at the university. Mick, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
And now let's start with a description of your role at the School of Medicine. What does a coordinator of medical humanities do?
So what I do at the medical schools, I work with the first and second year medical students, the ones who are on campus and learning their basic medical skills before going out and getting clinical practice. And I work with them to help them establish both their professionalism skills and to help think through the types of doctors they are hoping to be, in the sense of how they will be ethical, how they will face ethical dilemmas and ethical problems, and their interaction with patients as they see them over their careers.
What are the range and focus of medical ethics? What are the principles that guide medical ethics?
So the principles that guide medical ethics, currently the main principle we try to advocate for is the idea that the center of our healthcare system is the patient-physician interaction, and that it is a patient-centric approach where patients are part of their own decision-making process and are invested in their own outcomes. And it's not simply the physicians telling us what we ought to do and being a dictatorial. In order to do this, we end up having a series of guiding principles that help those interactions. They can have fancy names like fidelity and non-beneficence, but at their heart, they're really about establishing trust and trying to make sure that every interaction puts the patient first and reduces potential harm.
So there's privacy, confidentiality, there's do no harm, do what you can to help, and be fair with it.
Yes, and that captures the core ideas that we want to get, which is that the idea of confidentiality and privacy are really to establish a trusting relationship, that when you go to see your physician, that he or she you can trust is going to protect your medical information and protect your rights. And the idea of the do no harm is so that you can trust that the physician is going to put your interests first and is not going to harm you for their own benefit or with untested treatments. But we also have a series of principles in there, like justice in treating individuals fairly and equally, so that we know that when we go in to see a physician, that we are going to be treated with the same care that somebody who was wealthy or famous would get when they came in. Now, these principles both protect us and provide us as patients guidance and what to expect, but it also provides guidance and a direction for the medical professionals. It provides a guiding set of principles so that when they are faced with difficult situations, that they have a set of tools to help them provide the best possible care for all members of the community that come in.
Well, it does seem that time is an element that is particularly under pressure during a pandemic. I'm old enough to remember when the doctor used to come to the house. Now, when I go to the doctor, there are 15-minute increments. And now, during a pandemic, I suspect it's far less time spent with a patient. So how would you frame the important issues that involve medical ethics during a pandemic?
Well, I think that we should see now in a pandemic, but we should see it as even in non-pandemic situations, that physicians' time is a resource. And it is a resource that ought to be allocated and used in the best possible way to provide the care for the most individuals. So yes, if you go in for a checkup, right now, most of your time is spent in 15-minute increments. And in an earlier time when physicians came to your house, why we don't do that anymore is largely because think of all the inefficiency, all of the time when the physician would be in transit between houses, that that physician could be doing something probably more important than waiting at stoplights. So by moving to a 15-minute increments, the idea is that most interactions, that's a reasonable amount of time, a good amount of time. It may not be what you or I as a patient would be ideally want to have a long conversation, but it's an efficient system. Now, we think about this 15-minute increments, but I do want to point out that almost every physician, when you actually talk to him or her, those increments, in the middle of the conversation, they're likely not going to say, time is up and walk out.
No.
But it provides a guidance for them about to make sure that they are focused during that time to make them the most efficient use of that time. Now, when we think in terms of a pandemic, the time ends up actually being different. Yes, lots of interactions end up being quicker, but some actually end up being more lengthy amounts of time that patients would actually see physicians, because individuals in the needing the most care are going to get a longer amount of time. So yes, some of it ends up being contracted and some ends up being expanded. But in reality, this is simply about trying to come up with the most efficient, best for the community of this allocation of this resource, which is the physician and nurse's time, really.
Well, there are other resources as well, and this is where there might be an intersection of the ethics of government oversight and the effects on medical ethics. It's tough to plan for a hurricane or a pandemic, but a pandemic requires much more equipment, much more immediately than normal business. So whose responsibility is that, the hospitals or the governments?
I think that there is a third possibility, which is that we as society bear some of this as well. And I think the allocation of these resources and the scaling up to be able to provide the aid and healthcare that we need requires all of the institutions like hospitals, the government, and private citizens and private industry to all bear some of this responsibility. So what does this mean when we have all of these parties contributing? So hospitals across the country and across our region as well are putting into place plans of how to reallocate space within the hospitals if we see an influx of individuals who need healthcare, who need to be hospitalized, who need ICU beds. But we also have the government, which has an obligation to help us plan ahead so that we can have had these conversations and have these decisions made before the moment when we are most desperately needing care. So if we can be thinking a month ahead or a week ahead or as early as possible of how we're going to be prepared. And this may include a state or federal government push towards moving resources to where they're going to best be needed. And then we as individuals and society and businesses have an obligation as well, which is to provide financial support, whether it be in increased taxes or it be changing company like GM moving from making automobiles to making ventilators, to be able to be willing to make those types of changes and sacrifices ahead of the point of no return, so that when we need these, all parties have positioned us in the best possible way for success.
Well, you mentioned the role of government in working with medical professionals and the discussion of what the individual's responsibility is here, too. And it seems to me the government has said social distancing is the principal responsibility of individuals right now. That's the personal freedom versus public health dilemma, our responsibility to help protect the health of others. So that's a sort of medical ethics across the entire society, isn't it?
Yes, and I also think that it is a just general ethics issue, not just about medical ethics, but it's about how do we interact with others? What is our responsibility towards others, given the sense that we live in communities and that we're social individuals? At its heart, ethics is about providing us guidance when our own desires and interests and what we believe we would like to do comes into conflict with what might be in the best interest of others individually, say my neighbor, if I stand too close to him at the mailbox, or others in the sense of the community as a whole, if I stay in my house and try to minimize my visits to the grocery store, try to avoid being within 6 feet of individuals, that this will reduce the spread of corona. And even if it doesn't reduce the amount of individuals who will end up getting coronavirus, it does make it so that the impact on the hospitals is more spread out and more manageable. We actually hopefully will have fewer people end up dying because of this. And ethics provides us with tools to help move away from the focus on our own interests and desires, to be able to be empathetic, to have a moral imagination where we can put ourselves in other people's shoes, and to imagine ways that we could reduce the negative impact of us simply pursuing our own self-interest, our own desires, the things that would make us happy in the short term.
Well, social distancing or self-quarantining is, for many, many people, an enormous tax that they've already paid. Some are unemployed. Many people are unemployed now. They've given up significant income to protect other people. Some of us, though, are fortunate just because of the kind of jobs we do to be still employed, you and me, for example. But healthcare workers are on the front lines. They're not in the basement like I am or in your home like you are, distanced from people and therefore protected from transmission. They are much more likely to be in an environment where their personal health is at risk. That's something considerable to ask of people.
Yes, it is. When we are asking anybody to put themselves at risk or to give up their livelihood, be this asking people to be fine with the sense that they may be furloughed, or on the other side of this, the healthcare professionals who, if they become seriously ill, that may mean the end of their career or maybe the end of their lives and their support for their families. This is a tremendous amount to be asking. But I think it's important for us to remember that we ask this of our healthcare providers all of the time. And right now, we are simply more aware of this than regular times. We ask our healthcare professionals to do things, to be engaged in what the rest of us try to avoid. I know most members of my family try to avoid going to the hospital as much as they can, and we're asking doctors and nurses to go in every day. We are asking them to see us at our worst. And it's right now that we are aware of this, how much we ask them. And I do want to admit, we are asking more of them now than we have in a non-pandemic scenario, because by going into work, by showing up, they are putting themselves at risk. They are more likely to contract coronavirus simply because they have more contact and because they have limited resources for protection. Should be aware of this, that this is a sacrifice that we are asking of them. And we as a society and as individuals should be trying to think of ways that we can support and honor and provide the resources that they need to help us as a citizen.
Well, many of the people who work at hospitals don't take the Hippocratic Oath. They're responsible for cleaning the hospital or maintaining the heating or, you know, keeping the lunchroom going. Their risks for these much lower paid hospital support staff are considerable, aren't they?
Yes. This goes back to your first question, is what does medical ethics do? And I started by saying that I work primarily with physicians in training, but we have a system that is only successful when all members of the healthcare system do their jobs. Yes, if doctors decided not to show up to work tomorrow, our hospital would cease to function and would become dangerous. But if all of the custodial staff didn't show up tomorrow, it would be equally as damaging to the hospital. And we are asking individuals at all levels, and we're not providing the support, and many of those individuals are invisible, and they deserve our respect and to be treated as the heroes that they are, still going to work, even if it's not in as high profile or as quote unquote glamorous of a position as the other frontline medical providers.
Mick Belts is the coordinator of medical humanities at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine. Mick, we've been hearing a lot about the emergency, the dire emergency in New York City, and there are other cities as well that are getting there. But they're talking about not having enough ventilators and the very real possibility that some sort of ethical triage decision is going to have to be made regarding the use of a ventilator, which would be life and death for those patients. Take us through that step.
So that is a situation where we are, that not just New York City is facing, but I believe that we are going to be seeing in places such as Los Angeles, Florida, we're seeing in Italy, and potentially even in smaller regional hospitals like in Fargo or Grand Forks, because we don't have the resources on a daily basis for the amount of demand of individuals who would desperately need those life-saving treatments. Medical ethics has a long history, about 50 years since the 1970s, has been putting thought into how do we manage resources in a fair way so that when a crisis occurs or when we have a scarcity, that a fair way to determine who should get access to those resources have those. This is a different way of saying that it's a way of thinking through when all individuals can't have access to it, who potentially lives and who potentially dies without treatment. Even though there is no shortage at this exact moment, we've learned over time that it's important for us as a medical community and medical ethicists to be getting facilities and getting society to think about beforehand how to manage these resources. Because if we wait until we are to the last ventilator, then we are likely to have bias. We are likely to have the strong emotional component of the patient right in front of us override and end up driving us towards what we would later look back at and say are unfair decisions. So how do we make these types of decisions? First and foremost, I think it's important for us to move in a way where we take the decisions out of the individual physician's hands. We should not burden the individual doctors to have a person they have been working with and forcing them to say, you don't get access to this. And I don't think we want that as a society, because we want our interactions with our physician to be one where we know that she is an advocate for us, or he will be in our corner at all times during that interaction. So we want to make it so that individuals who are not in the particular care are making those decisions.
Well, let's talk about the gigantic issue here about medical ethics, and that is the unfairness of access to healthcare in our country. Insurance is tied to employment for most people, And now we're entering a time of historic unemployment, and income inequality has been an issue now for a long time. How do healthcare professionals wrestle with that reality?
One of the areas that anybody in the healthcare profession is familiar with is the idea of social determinants of health. And this is a realization that individuals' socioeconomic, gender, race, where they live, be it rural or urban, be it in northern or southern areas of the country, can have and do have an impact on the potential outcomes of interactions. And this is both in the sense that not having access to healthcare, not having regular access to a doctor, and having to go to urgent care all the time for your needs means that you are less likely to go to the hospitals early on and are less likely to go in general, fewer amounts, which means by the time diseases are identified in you, you are further along the process. We end up facing that right now, where individuals who don't have access to healthcare are actually less likely to be tested for COVID-19. So by the time that they have symptoms that bring them to the emergency department, they are much worse off and have worse outcome potentials than individuals who have health insurance and aren't worried when they go into to get tested for COVID-19. How am I going to pay for hundreds of dollars of testings or thousands of dollars of treatments? The issue of healthcare and making sure that we provide either ourselves or through work or through other social networks to be able to make sure that that patients are able to get treatment early has an impact on their health outcomes at the end of the day.
Well, that is one of the heavier issues that's tied to this. And of course, the pandemic is going to be a rich field of discussion, I suppose, for medical ethicists for a long time to come. Mick Belts, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
Mick Belts is the coordinator of medical humanities at the UND School of Medicine and a senior lecturer in ethics in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies.